The original podcast was recorded in German. This podcast was translated using artificial intelligence. Burnrate, the Venture Insider podcast with Max Meister and Guy Jafrady.
Hello, welcome to Burnrate, the VC Insider podcast. I talk here with Guy Jafrady about the startup scene with a focus on venture capital. We have reached episode 99 and we are recording on Wednesday, the 10th of June at 9 o'clock in the evening. This podcast is sponsored by our partners Aventures and Wenger Vieli. So Guy, what are today's topics?
Episode 99. Exactly, extremely exciting. We have recorded this 99 times already. Today is again a transaction of the month episode. In the news, we first talk about the Devijur Award, which was presented this evening. After that, we look at a new deal room analysis on the Swiss startup landscape. And then we also discuss the new 103 million euro fund from Mirantix Capital. As the main topic we have, as always in the transaction episode, the Burnrate market snapshot, this time for May, we cover the most important financing rounds and exits in Switzerland, as well as a brief look at Europe and what has been happening there in the venture landscape. In the listener question, quite exciting, it is about why exits are often communicated very positively, even when it was actually, well, sometimes more of a fire sale than a proper exit. At the end, we take a detailed look at the transaction, the pre-seed round by Founderful in Mosaic, and we go into the company a little bit.
Before we get to the news, I would like to briefly bring up the IPO of SpaceX, which is now planned for Friday. SpaceX is no longer just a rocket company. The major investment thesis has by now become significantly broader. There is Starlink mobile communications from space. There is AI infrastructure, and in the long term, perhaps even data centers in orbit. The bull case projection is correspondingly aggressive. SpaceX could reach several hundred billion dollars in revenue by 2030, up from less than $19 billion last year, which is already substantial, one must say. The biggest driver would then be Starlink through the significantly higher payload capacity of Starship. That is the rocket. It could allow SpaceX to bring new satellites into space faster, and in particular to expand the still young direct-to-cell business, meaning satellite communication directly to the smartphone without additional hardware. On top of that, there is all of AI. The conservative case is SpaceX simply sells computing power to companies like Anthropic and Google. The more ambitious case is that Grok develops into a genuine alternative to Claude, ChatGPT, and Gemini. Grok, that is the LLM from SpaceX. Then SpaceX would suddenly be not only rocket and telecom infrastructure, but also a relevant AI player. So, Guy, what is for you the strongest part of this bull case story? Starlink, AI, or still the classic launch business?
Well, I would say now that Starlink is certainly a major driver here. I mean, the rocket business, that definitely remains important, but Starlink, that really has the potential to generate recurring revenues on a completely different scale. What will be exciting is what you mentioned, the direct-to-cell. If Starlink not only sells internet terminals, but effectively becomes infrastructure for mobile operators, then the barrier for end customers drops enormously. They might not even have to actively switch providers, and maybe then Swisscom and our Swiss providers no longer need to bother trying to build some 6G or 5G antennas somewhere, which nobody wants anyway. So that could still bring a major shift, but they first have to pull it off. The bear case, of course, is also still interesting if Starship does not really come together as well as they expect today. And then Starlink might also not grow quite as fast as they would like. And then perhaps the revenue per customer also comes under pressure. For example, if companies like Blue Origin enter the market and there is a price war in satellite communications, that is then suddenly enormous pressure on SpaceX. And yes, AI compute is, of course, an ultra hot topic right now. Everyone is investing in data centers. At the moment, computing power is scarce, but maybe that is also only a temporary phenomenon. And then suddenly, new data centers open up, more efficient models emerge. Then the margins of SpaceX could come under pressure. If you now look at it from the investor perspective, Max, is SpaceX even still a space company, or has it by now become more of an extremely hard-to-value rocket telecom AI conglomerate?
Well, I took the trouble once to read the 340-page IPO prospectus at leisure, and it is indeed the case that the valuation depends very heavily on things where there is not yet much revenue being made, that is a bit of an exaggeration, but it does apply. I mean, the stock market valuation is already crazy. We looked at that this week and also saw there is this Elon magic multiple, and that is, of course, already very, very substantial. But yes, it is. Also the appeal, but also the risk. I mean, the individual business units potentially reinforce each other. Elon Musk has done that well. Rockets bring satellites into space more cheaply. Satellites generate telecom revenues, and this infrastructure can in turn enable new data and AI businesses. So a classic flywheel. The biggest wildcard remains Elon Musk himself. He is, on the one hand, a significant part of the investment story. On the other hand, he is also a classic key person risk. When we invest, key person risk is very, very decisive for us. So the decisive question here is therefore not only whether SpaceX rises or falls on the stock market in the short term, but whether the company already has a stable foundation or whether the entire vision still depends heavily on one person. And of course it does. So if Elon Musk has a heart attack tomorrow, that is possible. Probably even more likely than for an average person, or he does not come down from a trip, that is also possible, probably also more likely than for a normal person, then the whole story is of course gone. But yes, one can always say that. You can always say, until now, Elon Musk has been sensationally well on track, and probably the Columbus of our time, and I find the guy absolutely brilliant. One can of course already argue now about his statements and second word. But if I only look at his business activity, I have to say, hats off. That is beyond. I believe we will still be talking about Elon Musk in 100 years, what he has accomplished, and above all, what he will still accomplish. So I do not see that now, at least in the short term, as problematic or very problematic. With that, SpaceX remains one of the most exciting but also most demanding valuations in the tech market, one must say. Extremely large opportunities, very high expectations, but many open questions that will only be answered in the coming years. My students asked me this week, yes, would you invest now? It is hard to say. I think on the first day, we will see a strong rise in the first few hours. And I mean, the lockups are, of course, substantial. So the top managers are not allowed to sell immediately, but these lockups then end after 6 months, usually. And if you now think back to the year 2000 and the bubble that burst, it burst precisely at the point when the top managers no longer had these lockups and then sold shares massively. And I think the share price could develop similarly then. It is very possible that on the first day, the price will rise strongly, then the price will cool down, and then at some point I will look at the stock carefully and evaluate it, and then there could already be a sensible entry point after a few months. That could be a strategy, for example, if one does not already get shares from the start. That is not quite so easy. One must, I think, invest a relatively large amount at the right bank. But certainly, the IPO is good for the whole thing. There is DPI again, meaning distributions. Today, an interesting article in the NZZ, how many millionaires SpaceX will create. So all these people can, of course, put money back into the system, can invest in private equity and venture capital, which is certainly positive. From these IPOs of SpaceX, of OpenAI, which also announced this week that they are going to the stock market and also shopping. That is good for us. That is good for the market and will ensure that imagination is still present a little bit in the near future. Good. Let us get to the news of the week. And namely, you are coming directly from a party, namely from the De Vizier Award that was presented this evening. The De Vizier Award is one of the most important and traditional startup prizes in Switzerland, namely since 1989, and the foundation supports young entrepreneurs in transforming innovative ideas into high-growth companies. Especially in an early phase, this support can be decisive. We know that. In addition to the prize money, the winners receive access to a strong network of investors, alumni, and industry experts. This year, up to 5 awards will be given, each endowed with 120,000 francs. In total, the foundation has already distributed more than 15 million francs to Swiss startups. This makes the award not only a recognition, but also an important impulse for the Swiss innovation and startup ecosystem. Guy, you are an ambassador of the De Vizier Foundation, and you were there at the award ceremony this evening. How was it?
Well, of course, very good. I cannot say otherwise. The event takes place each year, essentially in the summer house of the De Vigeur Foundation in Solothurn, a very beautiful property. In the basement, there is no internet, so everyone effectively has to listen and watch what is being presented on stage. You do not always have that the phones remain so deeply hidden in pockets, and anyone who looks at them immediately puts it away again. The event was very well organized. Hannah and Celine did a very good job there. Audrey Hoffman, who presides over the foundation now, also gave a very good intro on the topic of how the De Vigeur Foundation analyzes and supports founders. And they are very clearly on the line. Hey, it is not only a business that should be built, but effectively a problem should be solved, and that should be addressed sustainably. Not just, hey, I build up quickly, generate revenue, and then sell the thing as quickly as possible for as high a price as possible. And that, of course, you can also notice in the selection of the entrepreneurs who were among the final 10 and in the topics they had in there. One must say the winners, congratulations to the 5 prize winners. Those were dental robotics. They make a small mobile dental system where dentists can go to customers at home. In that sense, small and stylish and handy. That has enormous potential. I was a little surprised that they won the prize or one of the 5 prizes. Carol Nano, we have already reported on them several times. They also won the prize. They make post-silicon compute with carbon nanotubes. They describe themselves as the next ASML, extremely exciting technology. And the other 3 were also, again, in the medtech, health tech space. Alpina Sana addresses malnutrition. Kria Technologies is also still an interesting case. They have developed a technology for how to transport biomaterials cryogenically, meaning extremely cold, minus 80 degrees or lower with high vacuum, very simply. And OrthoSense, we have also spoken about them a number of times on burn rate. They are supposed to monitor and support the healing process after surgery for implants. And the 5 further companies, those would certainly be the ones that were almost a little more exciting for us, or at least also exciting. One in the quantum space with Kendra Windworks in the clean tech space. Then there was also Iron Energy, energy storage based on iron. Upgrade, a major topic. How do you get the energy from solar panels, from smaller operators into the system? And how do you manage that? They have built a software for that. And the last one was also a bio startup with ADS Bio. All in all, I would say very well chosen startups. I find that the founders did a great job there. And yes, I will definitely continue to support the foundation as an ambassador and give good founders a small hint. They should apply there because it really is a good prize with good reach. On top of that, you, of course, met many investors and also people from the ecosystem. The mood there was very positive.
Good. Mood very positive. Let us take that with us to the second piece of news. A new analysis from Dealroom delivers a fairly typical Swiss result. Internationally relevant, excellently educated, and very efficient, but not particularly large. In the global comparison of the largest startup hubs, no Swiss city makes it into the top 20. But once you put the performance in relation to population size, meaning per capita, the picture looks considerably better. Lausanne is among the leading locations worldwide. In the AI sector, Lausanne is even ranked 5th, Zurich at rank 16, and in the defense tech sector, Zurich also makes it far towards the front. So Guy, is that now only good news, or is it a politely formulated hint that Switzerland, despite excellent universities and a lot of deep tech research, still struggles to build truly large startup hubs?
Well, I mean, one can clearly say, I mean, that is not unknown. Switzerland certainly does not have an innovation problem. We have been the innovation world champion for over a decade, year after year. And Lausanne and Zurich show that from research, from universities with very specialized talent, many and also very good startups can emerge. And the report clearly shows, yes, we still have a little bit of a scaling problem. If you want to play in the league of the largest ecosystems, then you simply need a lot of capital, enormous international visibility, and companies that, when they grow from seed stage to global champion, demonstrate that and are present worldwide. Switzerland is better positioned with hidden champions who do not lean out of the window quite so broadly and also do not quickly reach 100 billion valuations, as one often sees in the Bay Area. Now also recently in London, and of course, New York. Those are far ahead of everyone else. I would say an interesting question that crystallizes here when you read the report in detail is, does Switzerland actually really need a single startup metropolis? Or would it actually be more realistic to position Zurich, Lausanne, Basel, all locations really as a common Swiss ecosystem and essentially as a metropolis Switzerland? Max, what do you think about that?
Well, I think the network is already a strength. The distances are short and the regions complement each other well. Lausanne with EPFL and AI, Zurich with ETH and FinTech, Deep Tech, Basel with Life Sciences. But yes, internationally, there needs to be clearly recognizable lighthouses. Nobody abroad automatically thinks in terms of a networked Swiss cluster. That is why you probably need both. I think better collaboration within Switzerland and at the same time, more ambition to make individual hubs more visible and larger. So the question is therefore, does one want, Switzerland alone would, I think, already be a good lighthouse. So that one says Switzerland equals innovation world champion. And within Switzerland, there are various clusters, whether one now tries to market the individual hubs. So market Basel individually, market Zurich individually, and EPFL, which is kind of happening a little bit at the moment. I think that is considerably more difficult. So long story short, I would wish for better, stronger collaboration of the individual regions in Switzerland. That is currently, I do not know how you see that, but not yet happening or not yet to the desired broad effect. I think there is still potential there, and that way Switzerland could also be positioned considerably better internationally. Let us come to the third piece of news. Mirantix Capital has closed a new fund of 103 million euros. With that, the Berlin-based AI investor wants to finance around 40 European startups, roughly half through classic seed investments, the other half through its own venture studio. What is exciting here is not only the fund size, but above all the approach. Mirantix sees itself not as a classic investor, but as an ecosystem with an attached fund. The company wants to provide founding teams not only with capital, but also connect them with industry partners, potential customers, and talent. I personally find particularly interesting a statement from Mirantix founder Adrian Locker. The venture studio companies would, as a rule, already have first paying customers before they have even written a single line of code. The focus is primarily on AI applications in areas such as robotics, manufacturing, logistics, healthcare, bio, life science, and fintech infrastructure. With large language models and interchangeable AI tools without clear differentiation, Mirantix is, by contrast, deliberately cautious. Guy, is this approach, meaning customers before code and deep integrations into existing value chains, from your perspective, the right European counter model to the US model? Or is there a risk that Europe thereby builds solid B2B companies but leaves the truly large AI platforms to others?
Well, perhaps first one must also say, this is now the strategy of Mirantix Capital. They are, of course, not the only investors in Europe, and they pursue a very clear thesis. Accordingly, we now focus really on what they are doing. We are in Europe very much deep tech investors who now also do not shy away from investments that go beyond just the application layer. But customers before code, I actually find that a good reality check because it prevents a startup from simply building something and thereby completely missing the real market. Especially in the AI space, you can quickly develop impressive demos today. The decisive question that remains is whether a real problem is being solved and whether a customer is actually willing to pay for it. But at the same time, this must not simply turn into individual project business. It is decisive what happens after the first customer. Can the solution be standardized and deployed as a product at many companies? Or does every customer then need a custom solution and that is more of a consulting business? In the first case, a large software company can emerge from that. And in the second case, well, that is simply the actual consulting that one builds. Europe does not, therefore, necessarily have to produce the next OpenAI, in my eyes or also in the eyes of Mirantix. But Europe should also not only become an integrator of American AI models. The opportunity lies in developing scalable products with global ambitions from strong industry relationships, which Mirantix has.
This episode is presented by ARE Ventures, the Bernese Business Angel Club. ARE Ventures brings ambitious Swiss startups together with experienced investors who offer more than just capital. A strong network, real expertise and hands-on support for the decisive early steps. If you want to grow as a startup or as an investor are looking for access to the most exciting early stage deals, then apply for our next event at www.auraventures.ch. Wenger & Vielli, your partner law firm for startups. Whether founding, financing round or exit, startups face complex legal challenges. Wenger & Vielli accompanies founders at every stage of their company with tailored advice on corporate law, financing, tax issues, and IP protection. Wenger & Vielli, your legal counsel for startups.
Let us get to the main topic. Today, that is the burn rate market snapshot for May 2026. Let us start with Switzerland. According to our compilation, only 13 financing rounds were published in May, where the amount was also communicated. Approximately 190 million Swiss francs of fresh capital were invested in the companies. 2 million in grants came on top of that. Prizes are also included in that. Then there were further strategic investments and some financing rounds where for once no amounts were published. In terms of volume, May is slightly below April. In April, 222 million were invested, but the picture is somewhat different when you go deeper. In April, we had a very broad mix of AI, climate tech, industrial tech, and capital market transactions. And in May, there was a very clear focus, namely life sciences. That is also nice to see.
Exactly. The largest fundraise of the month was Windward Bio. The Basel-based biotech company raised $165 million. The round was led by OrbiMed. Participating additionally were, among others, AA Capital, Sanofi Ventures, Novo Holdings, and further specialized healthcare investors. Windward Bio is working on long-acting therapies for immunological diseases. What is exciting here is not only the size of the round, but also the pace. The company was only launched in 2025 and has since raised a total of $365 million. Additionally, we have a special case, Nucleidum. The headlines from May speak of a Series B of 105 million Swiss francs. That is correct, but in May, 105 million were not newly invested again. Rather, the Series B was increased to this amount. The extension, meaning the new investment, amounted to approximately 26 million Swiss francs.
Well, I find both transactions, they illustrate for me an important difference between biotech and software cases. In biotech, very large amounts of capital often flow into the company before any or relevant revenues emerge. Clinical data has to be collected, a credible pipeline has to be built. And yes, you then have to convince the specialized investors from these fields that a lot of capital is invested so that you can get to market at all. Besides the two large transactions, there were also a few more life science and medtech rounds. Biocopy from Baseland raised 9 million. Neurosoft Bioelectronics from Geneva closed a seed round of $7.5 million. They develop brain-computer interfaces on the surface of the brain without having to penetrate deeply into the tissue.
And outside of life sciences, we continue to see an interesting breadth. Stellar Alpina, for example, raised 3.5 million Swiss francs. The young Zurich-based startup develops compact detonation-based propulsion systems for mobility in space. Avian closed a pre-seed round of 2 million Swiss francs and is working on systems for the early detection of industrial fires. And Mosaic, which we will come to talk about later, raised a $3.8 million round for real-time spatial intelligence. So one can say AI remains present, but AI was not the dominant capital magnet in Switzerland in May.
The same applies to the exit series. The largest deal of the month was by far Limatec Biologics. They were acquired by Eli Lilly for up to $780 million. Some defined milestone payments are included in that, so the direct transaction value was not quite that high. Limatec develops vaccines against bacterial infections. We briefly touched on what they do in the last episode, I believe. The next exit was NearLab. They were acquired by the US company 908 Devices for $23 million. And then there was Curly, the Swiss manufacturer of dog harnesses and accessories, which was acquired by Thule for just under 17 million francs, assuming all conditions or milestones are also achieved in the coming years. Then there were also a few transactions where no amounts were communicated. But I find it very good when we see three transactions in 1 month where the exit is actually also reported. We will talk about that in the listener question.
Yes, you are right about that. Exactly. That really is. Otherwise, it always is that people do not share that. Now, we have a counter trend there. And overall, the exits are an interesting mix. We had biotech, industrial analytics, consumer brand with Curly and IT services. So the exit activity is broader than the financing side in May. Let us briefly look at the startup ecosystem outside of the funding rounds. One highlight in May were the Swiss startup days in Bern around the collective gathering and the startup days, where the Swiss startup scene came together for 2 days. That is relevant because especially in a selective financing environment, personal networks and the exchange between founders, investors and corporates as well as politics are gaining importance again. Then we had the ZKB Pioneer Prize at the Technopark. The main prize of 100,000 francs was won by RDDT Laboratories. All five prize winners who were on site are extremely exciting in my view. And the accelerator programs, House Start Accelerator and Microsoft AI Accelerator, were concluded, gave the participating companies a lot of visibility. And finally, the SEF Growth Awards were also presented last week at the Swiss Economic Forum.
And perhaps still a conclusion for Switzerland, very clearly life science scaling. A brief conclusion, Windward Bio and Nucleum show that Swiss biotech companies are still very attractive for international investors and they can mobilize international financing. And with Limatech, we simultaneously also have international buyers who want to acquire Swiss biotechs. I also find it striking how international the capital flows were this month. With the large rounds, again, we have specialized global investors at the table. And with the exits, everything was also sold abroad. So the Swiss IP is being taken over or partially taken over by abroad through participations. That confirms once again, we are globally connected in Switzerland. But the old question remains, how much ownership, value creation and long-term upside effectively stays in the Swiss ecosystem?
Let us briefly look at Europe. For May, a considerably stronger financing picture shows itself here than in the previous month. In the 4 complete weeks from the 4th to the 31st of May, more than 245 financing deals with a total volume of at least 9.6 billion euros were recorded across Europe. In April, we were at around 5.1 billion euros. May was therefore again a very capital-intensive month. At the same time, it is important. These figures include different forms of financing, among them classic equity rounds, growth financings, as well as also debt. The largest deal came from the UK Pure.DC secured financing of $2.7 billion for the expansion of its data center infrastructure in Europe and the Middle East. That is not a typical startup round, but it shows very clearly where a lot of capital is currently flowing, into the physical infrastructure behind the AI boom.
It is nice to see that data centers are also gaining speed in Europe and are not only being built in the rest of the world while we look in from behind. The second large transaction, also from the UK Isomorphic Labs, many will certainly have heard of them. They received an investment of $2.1 billion. The company was founded as a subsidiary of Alphabet out of the DeepMind environment and is headquartered in London. Building on technologies like AlphaFold, Isomorphic Labs develops an AI-based platform that is supposed to identify new drug candidates faster and bring them into clinical development. Alongside that, we have further large AI infrastructure cases. AntScale, for example, secured a financing round of $97 million for a data center project in Norway. Recursive Superintelligence came out of stealth mode with a round of 650 million. So that was a long stealth mode and a big bang that they made there. And Fractal also raised 220 million to develop new chips for AI inference.
Exactly. And at the same time, May was not only an AI month, one must say, large financings also took place in space, security, energy, and fintech. ICI, my goodness, the names are getting increasingly weird, Guy, right? It is not so easy to pronounce at all. ICI from Finland secured a credit facility of 300 million euros to expand its satellite-based intelligence platform. Focused Energy from Germany raised $240 million US dollars for fusion technology. EOS X Space from Spain, $140 million, and Vonova from Ireland came with a Series C of €94 million. Consistently, the UK remains the most important European funding hub, but that also shows the total volume continues to depend heavily on a few very large transactions. The deal flow is broad, but a considerable portion of the capital concentrates on capital-intensive companies and infrastructure projects.
As a conclusion for Europe, capital is available. It is flowing increasingly and strategically into areas like AI and data centers. With that, the focus is definitively shifting away from pure software towards infrastructure, data centers, chips, and also drug discovery. And then simultaneously alongside that come, of course, also a few sovereignty themes such as space, energy, and security.
Very good. Let us come to the listener question of this week, and namely this time from an anonymous listener, and he writes the following, very interesting. As an investor in numerous Swiss startups, it always upsets me greatly when exits are presented as a great success on LinkedIn and in press releases when it was actually a fire sale. Most recent example, Konami. Return for investors 0.0. I understand that the narrative always has to be positive, but a little humility would do many people good. What do you think about the often far too positively communicated exits? Guy, I would gladly give you the floor first.
Well, I mean, I am glad that the question has come up and that it was formulated in such a way that we do not quite have to mention all of it ourselves. I mean, that is a topic we always discuss together and actually one of the fundamental reasons why Burn Rate exists at all. We started with wanting to bring more transparency to the ecosystem, of course, with the exit fire sales. Celebrating a fire sale as a proper exit, that is almost the worst thing. But also with the financing rounds, hyping them when it was actually a down round. Those are topics, yes, I find it really not good when you bring false incentives into the media, especially in an ecosystem where we do have many people who have allocated quite a lot of capital to startups. They see the positive announcements. At others, the companies are maybe going well. The exit is still a bit away. And then with those who have fully written them off, those celebrate that they made a huge exit. So I actually find it not optimal when it is sold as a great exit, but I also find it good that it is not simply turned into a sad story swept under the rug. One simply has to try to put that in perspective a little. That is my view. We can gladly go into a bit more detail on why and what one could do there. What is your perspective on that, Max?
Well, I myself have also been affected a few times, and I find it simply really fundamentally suboptimal when you have a fire sale that is communicated as a great success. That is a no-go for me. Perhaps briefly for the listeners, what is a fire sale? A fire sale is already a remarkable achievement. It means that you are able to not drive the company into a wall, meaning into bankruptcy. And at the moment, there are very many bankruptcies, but rather you are able to find someone who takes the company off your hands, usually for 1 franc, maybe also for 100,000 francs. But one must say, that is not nothing, because the buyer must then take on all the cash burn that is often still present, and that is sometimes also substantial. That is why a fire sale is already also a success for me. But it is not a success for the investors. It is certainly not a huge success for the founders. It is simply a success in the sense that one managed to hand the company over to new owners. And often, it is then the case that the employees can also stay and so on and so forth. But that one then presents that as a great success. That one sends out a press release. That one then perhaps even engages a PR agency to write a big announcement with photo and so on and so forth. Handshake with the buyers. I mean, that is a ripoff. I find that suboptimal. Okay, I find that does not work. One should not necessarily do that. Rather, one can celebrate a success. One can celebrate an exit when one has sold substantially. If one now sees, okay, one was able to realize a notable amount, then I find one can celebrate that exit and also revel in it, but actually only in that case. Otherwise, I find one should actually not communicate much. Perhaps a message on LinkedIn that one has handed the company over to new owners. That is it. But not now a big theater, a LinkedIn theater. I find that suboptimal. And that is kind of also something that has been happening quite a lot recently, that one has, of course, massively promoted these success stories. And I find that not necessarily optimal. Rather, I find that one should also transparently show when that was not the case, but simply be open about it. And a fire sale is not automatically a personal failure. I think that is quite important. But it is also not automatically a great success. And I think that is indeed decisive. And therefore, I find the question absolutely justified. And we should certainly be more self-critical with ourselves and present the narrative accordingly to the outside as well.
Well, I think what you said there is very important. The company still exists, or the employees at least still have, for a period of time, the same work. The IP is not simply no longer used or bought out of the bankruptcy administration. And for such a fire sale, it is also an enormous amount of work for the transaction to even take place at all. And of course, it is clear if you run a marathon, not in 2 hours world record, but in 5.5 hours, and then say, hey, that is still a remarkable achievement. It is indeed. Nobody wants to say anything against that. Afterwards, you also want to celebrate it. But you do then have to say, hey, it was handed over to good hands, and not, we have now built a super, super story for 20 years and are now the kings because we were able to sell the company. I also see that exactly the same way. What is important is the fair contextualization, which I think right now is really not quite actually happening. And it is also the case one does not have to say anything about transaction values in Switzerland and also with buyers who are often still in private hands. You cannot read from a balance sheet what they paid for this company. And accordingly, yes, people sometimes try to present themselves a little better than they perhaps would like. And for the investors who stand behind that, it is, of course, simply, yes, a pure drop of acid on a wound. The write-off hurts. And then suddenly colleagues come, hey, you invested there. Don't you also want to invest with me because you just had an exit there? And you may not even be allowed to say anything because you are still under NDA. And that is also already a suboptimal position. That is why I understand the anger or frustration of our anonymous investor quite well.
Well, one has to be honest. So if in a company, a typical Swiss startup, the deep tech startups in the Series C, perhaps 60 million were invested. I mean, if the company is then sold for 20, 30 million, that is de facto also a fire sale, or if you will. So I think if you apply the fire sale definition broadly, you can de facto say that whenever the invested capital was not recouped in the exit, it is de facto a fire sale because the investors, or at least not all investors, got their money back. And therefore, I do think a critical examination is important. And it is also up to us at Burnrate to be critical there and to always ask ourselves the question with exits, well, is that good or not? So we had, for example, Curly today, they realized 17 million, I think 10 million upfront and the remaining 7 million in earnout. And there are only two founders. And as far as I understood, they are completely bootstrapped. Now, that is not a fire sale. That is a good exit. Both are probably walking away with 4 to 5 million each, tax-free. That is a success for me. And then you have completely different cases that, of course, look very large. But when you look closely, you realize, oops, well, perhaps the last investors still got a little something with the liquidation preference. But otherwise, the other investors, especially the early stage investors, came out empty-handed. At this point, still quite interesting, I was also contacted this week by someone on Anthropic. The thesis was the Series A and B investors would get nothing from the exit because they were massively diluted. We then looked at that together, Guy, and then realized that the Series A investors still hold approximately 3 to 5% of the company and have a multiple of approximately 4 to 500. So that is also still exciting. So when you then have such cases, it of course becomes really exciting. So there it can also then be very interesting for early investors to be part of it. But that only as a side note.
Very good. We could probably still discuss and chew on this topic for half an hour or an hour and get worked up again. But let us set that aside. If you have further questions or would like inputs on this topic or assessments, dear Mr. Anonymous, then do write us an email perhaps. We would, of course, not pass on your name. So then let us come to the transaction of the month. The decision was not easy for us. Which transaction to work through? for this episode. We decided on Mosaic. The company has, as mentioned in the intro, just closed a financing round in May.
Exactly. The Zurich-based deep tech startup Mosaic has closed a pre-seed round of $3.8 million. The round was led by Founderful, with Kickfund from the VentureKick ecosystem also participating. The company develops particularly energy-efficient chips that are meant to enable devices to have real-time spatial perception.
Well, I find that quite exciting. Mosaic is not simply building yet another AI chip. Rather, the startup addresses a very concrete hardware bottleneck. Many devices today have cameras and sensors, but simply not enough computing power to continuously understand their surroundings. Classic processors, CPUs, and GPUs are often far too power-hungry for small battery-operated devices. They get too hot and too large, and Mosaic wants to penetrate directly into the hardware with spatial intelligence and build a specialized chip for it.
Mosaic was founded in 2024 by Alfio Di Mauro and Moritz Scherer. Both completed their doctorates at ETH Zurich in the field of electrical engineering. The two bring deep expertise in system and chip architectures and industrial experience from projects with companies such as Meta, NXP, and GlobalFoundries. Mosaic is a typical ETH deep tech case, one can say. Technically demanding, hardware-heavy, and emerged from a concrete research problem.
And the problem can be explained relatively simply. The next generation of wearables, meaning smartphones and autonomous devices, should not only record their surroundings, but effectively understand them. For a smart glass to know where objects are located, to recognize people or hands, and simultaneously create a map of the space, various sensor data must be continuously processed to achieve that. And today you need GPUs or other powerful processors for such data processing, and those are simply not suitable for these small end devices. A large NVIDIA GPU on a smartwatch, smart glass. Imagine that. That would also not look quite so comfortable for the neck. And that is one of the reasons why many smart glasses simply still look more like prototypes than like normal glasses.
We also looked at this more closely from a technological perspective. Mosaic develops integrated circuits that process visual data, position data, and further sensor signals directly on the device. The company describes its approach with the sentence, "turning space into signal." So concretely, the platform combines several building blocks: spatial perception on a small and power-saving, energy-efficient chip, object recognition and tracking, audio processing, as well as simultaneous localization and mapping, or SLAM for short. A device can thereby determine its position, build a local map, and classify objects in its environment temporally and also spatially.
From that, very concrete use cases emerge. A pair of glasses can, for example, recognize where a key was last seen and where the phone is lying again, or also quite spontaneously create a floor plan of a room. And a smartphone could continuously evaluate its front camera in low power mode and then start a recording when a certain event or object is recognized. Other fields of application can be autonomous systems, robotics, navigation, and so on. And the most important difference compared to a pure chip provider for Mosaic, they do not only deliver silicon. The chip they are developing has a software layer integrated on which device manufacturers can build. With that, the ODMs do not have to develop the entire perception functionality themselves from scratch, but can instead build on the Mosaic tech.
And the traction is remarkable. For a pre-seed hardware case, the early commercial development is noteworthy. Mosaic states that it has already achieved relevant revenues from engineering contracts in the first year. These are so-called NRE contracts, meaning non-recurring engineering. Customers pay for development and integration work. That is initially a sensible model because the company thereby works closely with ODM partners, understands real requirements, and at the same time generates first revenues. In the long term, however, the revenue profile is supposed to shift away from individual engineering projects towards scalable product revenues through chip sales.
With that, the business model strongly resembles classic semiconductor startups and companies. The early phase is heavily driven by the development projects. The big leverage then arises when a chip reaches a successful consumer product and is integrated into it, and then that product is also sold in high unit volumes and they generate royalties. With that, let us briefly come to the financing round and the financing history. That is relatively simple. Here is the pre-seed round. The first round of Mosaic, $3.8 million. As you said, Founderful led it. Kickfund is on board. The valuation was set at 9.3 million Swiss francs pre-money. And we were able to briefly speak with the lead investor, with Founderful. There was Antonia Albert, principal in the lead. Many thanks for your information on your investment rationale, which I am allowed to share here with the listeners. This now comes from Founderful. The team is exceptional. Moritz and Alfio are two ETH doctoral graduates with extraordinary depth in SoC architecture. When founders bring this level of technical expertise and have already successfully executed real development contracts in the first year, that is a signal one should not ignore. They trust each other, thanks to a well-grounded academic and industrial background, and are great in collaboration. So here, a 6 out of 6 for the team from Founderful. And they also said something about timing and the market. The timing in the market is ideal. Spatial computing is just becoming reality. Smart glasses are on the verge of a breakthrough. But the decisive hardware bottleneck remains energy consumption, and with it, the form factor. Mosaic solves exactly this problem. Real-time perception at a fraction of the energy requirement needed today. The next generation of wearable devices needs exactly this chip, says Founderful. And finally, they also told us something about the business model. The business model is designed for scaling. Mosaic is not only selling a chip, but a complete solution that facilitates adoption and creates a repeatable, cumulatively growing revenue stream that is tied to every device shipped. Many thanks, Antonia, for your inputs. Very exciting to read that, and we are curious to see how Mosaic develops.
So, the strategic direction is clear. The company wants to go from first engineering traction to scalable chip deployments and further develop its software stack. They are in the process of expanding their team with several positions and simultaneously building the chip, the implementation, and the developer tools.
And the bull case is strong and also clear. If smart glasses and other always-on devices actually come to the mass market, then such chips are needed that enable visual intelligence at minimal energy consumption. Mosaic could position itself as a fundamental perception layer in exactly these devices.
The bear case is typical for semiconductor startups. The development cycles are long, hardware roadmaps can shift, and the path from a pilot project to high-volume series production is demanding and long. Added to that is the dependency on a few large device manufacturers and their product decisions.
And then still my conclusion. Mosaic is quite an exciting Swiss deep tech case. The company is genuinely solving a concrete technical problem and has a clear commercial logic. And not every AI application only needs more computing power, especially with wearables. There, the winner could also be the one who gets by with significantly less energy. So a company that I have definitely put firmly on my radar to follow.
So that was Burn Rate, the VC Insider podcast. If you want to support our podcast, subscribe to our newsletter and share it in your network. We will see you for episode 100 next week. Many thanks for listening in. We wish you a lovely weekend. Take care and goodbye.